The fifth case of the day, the United States versus Rodriguez-Alvarez. Mr. Plotkin?
Judge Easterbrook, Judge Flom, Judge Rovner, may it please the court, I'm Gabe Plotkin. I represent the appellant Carlos Rodriguez-Alvarez. The sentencing judge did not consider factors in 3553A when imposing sentence in this case and did not provide an adequate statement of reasons consistent with 3553A for explaining why the sentence selected was appropriate for Mr. Rodriguez. The sentence is therefore unreasonable. It must be vacated and the case remanded.
Therefore, given our recent decisions in Dean and Mikitiuk.
Well, in Dean,
is your position consistent with those decisions?
My position, yes, I believe is consistent with Dean. I submitted a 28J.
Well, we said in Dean that the judge doesn't have to discuss any of these factors at all if the sentence is within the guideline range.
Well, Dean holds...
doesn't have to say boo about them.
Dean holds that 3553A is mandatory and can trump the guidelines and does trump the guidelines. That was never acknowledged by the court.
But look, it, bottom line, is it your position that a judge has to say, I have considered all the factors listed in Section 3553A or something similar? In other words, why isn't it enough for a district court to say, I have considered all of your arguments, when it's absolutely clear that the defendant's arguments included consideration of the factors in 3553A?
I don't believe that there is a formula that can be applied to every case, but what is important is that the district court creates a sufficient record from which this court can determine whether the sentence imposed is reasonable in light of the factors in 3553A. The judge did say in this case, I have considered the favorable factors articulated by the defendant, but this is not enough, and it's important to look at the context in this case. For example,
that's why I asked whether your position was consistent with Dean, which held that it is enough, as did Mikitiuk, for that matter.
To the extent that Mikitiuk and Dean can be read in such stark terms to suggest that a properly calculated guideline range sentence is, without anything else, reasonable.
No. That's a different question. Whether the sentence within the guideline range is always reasonable, the answer is no, it's not always reasonable. But that does not imply that the judge in every case must traipse through the factors. And you, as I understand your argument, you're not arguing that the sentence was unreasonable. You're arguing that it wasn't explained with the degree of factor-specific explanation that you think is required. And I'm repeating myself now. That's exactly the position Dean and Mikitiuk rejected, as squarely as we knew how to write those opinions.
Two concerns about that. First of all, to say that the guidelines stand on their own as reasonable for 3553A is inconsistent.
No. What they say, what those two cases say, is that sentences that are properly calculated under the guidelines are given a strong presumption of reasonableness, and therefore little additional explanation by the district court judge is required.
I believe that that is inconsistent with the Booker decision, and that is inconsistent with 3553A. I also believe that's unconstitutional.
Then you should be asking us to overrule Dean and Mikitiuk.
To the extent,
rather than saying your position is perfectly consistent with them.
To the extent that
it isn't.
Dean and Mikitiuk state that no explanation is needed for if the sentence is within the guideline range, I believe
that's not what they say either. In order to produce a guideline range, the judge produces a lot of explanation. What the cases say is that having gone through what's necessary to produce a guideline range, the judge doesn't need to address separately each of the criteria in 3553A. Right? Whether the sentence produced by the guidelines is substantively reasonable is an independent question.
I believe that's inconsistent with the Supreme Court's holding in Booker.
Yeah,
the Supreme Court said that the guidelines must be considered together with the sentencing factors in 3553A. Dean also holds that 3553A is mandatory and binding on all judges. And 3553A and the guidelines are not the same thing. There are different considerations that inform a sentence under 3553A that inform a sentence under the guidelines. To the extent it's enough to calculate the guidelines as well, we are running the risk of sanctioning a sentencing regime that is in fact unconstitutional, and the same regime that was struck down by the Supreme Court in Booker.
Let's look at this case for a minute. What evidence of disparity in sentencing was submitted to Judge Duryakhin? In other words, is this really a contested fact that had to be ruled upon by the district court judge?
It is a contested fact. 3553A6 talks about unwarranted disparities, and evidence was brought forward to show that under fast track programs in various jurisdictions around the country, similarly situated defendants to Mr. Rodriguez were receiving significantly lower sentences under the guidelines. And we asked the court to determine whether that was a disparity and whether that disparity was unwarranted. And until the sentencing judge goes through that process of making those findings and making that analysis, he has not properly considered the factors under 3553A, as he is bound to do under Booker, under the Sentencing Reform Act, and under the language in Dean that says 3553A is mandatory and binding on judges. That's one example of the facts that should have been found and the analysis that needs to take place in this case.
Well, the judge did make it clear, didn't he, Mr. Plotkin, that he was aware that that was his obligation? I mean, didn't he specifically note that he was being asked to examine it under 3553?
The judge acknowledged that he was being asked to consider 3553A, but he never said the defendant is right. He never said, I am following 3553A, and it's important to note that the government was arguing something different. The government was arguing the guidelines are advisory. The favorable information being brought forth by the defendant does not satisfy the traditional departure grounds, and therefore departure is not warranted. Furthermore, they said that some of the favorable factors being brought forward are irrelevant. So when the judge says, I've considered the favorable factors, we don't know if the judge was considering them, as the government suggested, under departure grounds, or if he was considering them but saying, for example, they're irrelevant. Under Booker, those factors are irrelevant, are relevant. They're essential to the court's determination. And so to the extent that there's no context provided, I don't think we can take that single line as sufficient.
I think there's some other language we might look to, but what type of response or specificity are you looking for? Just give me an example or two.
In this case, one example would be with the fast track program. For the judge to say, I understand 3553A6 discusses unwarranted sentencing disparities. I have considered, or I'm considering, whether there is a disparity created based on geography and administrative concerns. I am trying to determine whether that disparity is warranted or unwarranted, and then I'm going to apply that information to the other factors to determine what is the sufficient but not greater than necessary sentence in this case. The judge didn't do anything like that. It didn't even actually say, I have considered the fast track argument. The judge didn't respond to that argument at all, and that fails to produce the kind of record that this court can then review for reasonableness. I would save the rest of mine for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Plotkin. Ms. Bonamici?
May it please the court, counsel, good morning. The sentence imposed by the district court in this case was within the properly calculated advisory guidelines and was reasonable. And contrary to my opponent's position, the district court was not required to make findings of fact with respect to each and every factor set forth in 3553A or with respect to each and every argument raised by the defendant.
Does the government dispute the defendant's claim that there is a disparity in sentencing between jurisdictions with illegal reentry fast-track programs and those without such programs?
Well, Your Honor, with respect to that specific very, very narrow issue,
yeah,
the government would not dispute the fact that there may be disparity between defendants who have received fast-track sentences and defendants who have not, in whatever jurisdiction they may be. However, the government does dispute significantly the concept that that is an unwarranted disparity. It certainly is not an unwarranted disparity. And even if it were a disparity that could be considered a basis for a departure or, more generally, a sentence outside the applicable advisory guideline range, it was completely within this district court's discretion to determine that other factors, including the defendant's extensive criminal history and the fact that the defendant had illegally reentered the United States more than once, showed a strong need for specific deterrence that outweighed any aspect of the disparity analysis. And that's simply what the district court obviously did in this case. The district court went through the factors that are set forth in the statute. The district court went through the defendant's arguments, and then the district court specifically focused on the facts that it determined to be decisive in deciding to, number one, impose a sentence within the applicable guideline range, and number two, to impose a sentence at the high end of that range. And the factors that the court focused on very specifically were the defendant's extensive and violent criminal history and the multiple illegal reentries. And this is certainly within the court's discretion. And as Judge Easterbrook points out, the defendant in this case is not even arguing that the sentence actually imposed was unreasonable. What the defendant's argument boils down to is that even if the sentence is within the properly calculated guidelines range, and even if the sentence has not been shown to be unreasonable by reference to the factors set forth in 3553A, the sentence may still be and must still be deemed unreasonable if the court fails to give to state on the record specific factual findings to each and every argument made by the defendant. That's simply not the case. And we would argue that the defendant's position is completely inconsistent with Dean and Mikutyuk, which I can never pronounce no matter how many times I try. Those cases specifically held that
my
while...
My effort is only a best guess.
Oh, well, I was copying you, Your Honor, because I've been saying Mikutyuk. In any event,
I think there's probably some federal rule against issuing important decisions that no one can pronounce.
Well, I'd go for that. But with respect to those cases, this
court... But it's not a jurisdictional rule.
This court specifically held that while the court must decide contested factual issues that go to the application of the sentencing guidelines and must do so on the record, it is not necessary for the court to decide factual issues that relate to possible sentences outside the sentencing guideline range unless the district court finds that those facts might be decisive. Clearly, the court in this case did not do that, and it was under no obligation to do so.
Would you agree, Ms. Bonamici, that the argument advanced on the fast-track issue would not be the normal argument perhaps presented in most cases where you're asking to consider 3553? I mean, that's...
It's the argument that you'd see in every case, but right. it's actually one of a group of arguments that actually are raised quite frequently.
Well, I understand it's a group of arguments, but I guess my point is if we have presented in a case for consideration by a district judge a somewhat unique in the sense it doesn't occur with the regularity of the other factors under 3553 occur, it might not be bad for the court to address that factor. I mean, you got to say something other than I looked at 3553 factors and nothing impresses me.
Well,
right.
Changing the order of my answer because now I've lost track of which order I should present it in. But just to tell you my response. One, the district court in this case did in fact go beyond.
Oh, I know that.
Doing
I,
that. Number I two, that. I would agree that it would be helpful and useful for the district court to say every single thing that went through his mind from the beginning to the end of the analysis.
I look, I don't I'm not suggesting that that's what has to be done, and that's certainly not the law of our circuit.
And I don't mean to suggest
that
you did.
But we're trying to plumb the depths of what the argument sought here is. You know, the 87 months question isn't really what's being pressed as I see it. What's being pressed is, was a district court presented with a specific approach, along with all the other things that under the consideration advanced by the plaintiff, by the defendant.
Well, the government would agree that that would be useful, Your Honor, and the government has no, you know, no opinion regarding that with respect to this case. But what the primary issue here is whether the district court's failure to do that renders unreasonable a sentence that is in all other respects reasonable, in the sense that it is within the guideline range and it has not been shown to be unreasonable, or even in this case argued to be unreasonable by reference to the factors set forth in 3553A. Under those circumstances, Your Honor, the government would say that this case really ought to be...
Well, I think under the facts of this case, it might be unreasonable for the defendant to ask for consideration, whether it was the 87 months was unreasonable. I'm not saying that's their position, but it might be. So I'm trying to think, well, there's another reason why they appealed this case, because that didn't look like the strongest argument. And I'm suggesting they may have been arguing, I don't know, from my reading of the brief and from Mr. Plotkin's presentation, that when they focused on a specific consideration under 3553, that they're disquieted, if not uncomfortable, with whether or not that factor was considered. That's the way I have framed it for myself. That perhaps may not be either the party's or my colleague's view of the case. But
well, I think that's fair, Your Honor. But what we would say is that while that might be useful, the government does not believe that a bright line rule requiring the district court to do that in every case on pain of reversal of a sentence is something that we would support. So that's our answer.
I understand. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Plotkin, do you have any time?
A minute and a half.
A minute and a half, Mr. Plotkin, to correct my view of your case.
Your Honor, it is our position that when the defense brings forward specific arguments under 3553A, that the court is the sentencing court is obligated to consider those.
It can't be that just they consider it, because then he says I considered it, or she says I considered it.
Your argument is that he's obliged to discuss them.
He's obliged to create a record. As Dean points out, you need...
And in order to say that, we would have to overrule Dean and Mikatia. There's no way around that.
If there is such a strong presumption that a proper guideline calculation alone can be enough, then this court is sanctioning a regime, a sentencing regime, that is unconstitutional.
No, because you're just not distinguishing between what is reasonable and what things must a judge say on the record. As I understand it, my colleagues have said this too, correct me if I'm wrong, you're not contending that this sentence is substantively unreasonable because it is excessively long in light of the applicable statutes.
I'm contesting that this sentence is unreasonable because the judge hasn't properly considered the factors until the judge has properly gone through, for example, the fast-track argument under 3553A6. We simply do not know if the 87 months was imposed because he believes, for example, that makes him similarly situated to if that makes his sentence the same as other similarly situated people or not. We don't know the process. And this court requires in all different contexts that a judge apply the law and state his reasons on the record to ensure that he's followed the law, and so that this court can provide the meaningful appellate review that is required under Booker and 3553A.
Thank you, Mr. Blackman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bonamici. Case is taken under advisement. The